Welcome to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Mike. Today is Monday, August 31st, 2026, which means we're looking back at the top trending stories from yesterday, August 30th. Welcome to episode 504. We have a really fascinating mix of topics today. We're covering everything from a massive security oversight in a popular Linux distro, to the EU pushing for encryption backdoors again, and even a California law that might accidentally make every teenager a Linux power user.
Not to mention a really interesting philosophical piece on why developers are completely blind to software bugs, and a fun story about absolute dedication to typography in a 1990s video game guide.
Let's actually start with that bug blindness article, because I think it sets a great tone for how we interact with technology. It's a piece by Dan Liu titled simply, Bug Blindness.
Right. So Dan starts by asking a question I think a lot of us in tech have asked ourselves. Why do I see so many bugs when normal people don't seem to notice them? He talks about how he easily observes hundreds of bugs a week, things just fundamentally not working. But when he talks to non-programmers, they just don't see the world that way.
He gives some great examples, like how he will test a product for an executive, find that it requires completely non-intuitive workarounds just to function, but the internal team thinks the product is flawless. He mentioned Blackboard, the course management software, which was universally despised by students, but he actually met an employee who genuinely believed users loved it.
The Hacker News comments on this were absolute gold. A user named S. Gentle had this brilliant breakdown of the two opposite causes of bug blindness. For developers, their mental model is so perfectly aligned with the system that they have the exact same blind spots as the software. They cannot think outside the system.
Exactly. The classic joke is that QA walks into a bar and orders 0 beers, -1 beers, and 0.999 beers. But a real customer walks into the bar, asks where the bathroom is, and the bar immediately bursts into flames.
That is the best way to describe it. But Scrintle also pointed out how regular people interact with systems. They don't have a mental model at all. They just click things, and if it doesn't work, they shrug and click something else. They don't form expectations. To a normal user, a computer isn't an engineered machine. It's more like a genie or a symbiotic fungus.
A symbiotic fungus. I love that. And another commenter added that this is exactly why UX designers exist. Developers often condescendingly say users just need to read the documentation. But users aren't stupid. They just don't get a dopamine hit from solving technical problems. They just want the tool to work so they can get back to their actual lives.
There were some hilarious tech support horror stories in that thread, too. One person talked about watching a developer reflexively click away an error pop-up so fast that no one could read it. They literally had to take the mouse away from him to see what the error said. We have just trained ourselves to ignore the system when it yells at us.
Speaking of obsessive attention to detail, our next story is titled, I Just Chose Words Carefully. This is a post by Marcin Witchery about the nightmare that is typesetting in monospace fonts.
If you have ever opened a plain text file, you know that full justification, where the text aligns perfectly on both the left and right margins, looks terrible. The spaces between words get too large and uneven. You can't use hyphenation easily without it looking messy. So most people just use left alignment.
But Marcin highlights this legendary guide for the Super Nintendo game Super Metroid, written by a guy named RS1 in the late 90s. The entire guide is perfectly justified on both sides. No weird double spaces, no hyphens. How did he do it? In the FAQ at the bottom of the guide, someone asks what program he used to justify the text. His answer? None. I just chose words carefully so that everything lined up on the right-hand side.
For 17,000 words, he literally rewrote his sentences, choosing different synonyms and phrasing, just so every single line would perfectly hit the character limit. That is a level of dedication to the craft that is almost frightening.
It really is. And the Hacker News comments took this in such an unexpected direction. A user brought up an interview with Gillian Anderson about the X-Files. She revealed that the show's creator, Chris Carter, had an obsessive habit of writing the scripts so that there were no widows or orphans.
Yes, meaning no single words left alone on a line at the end of a paragraph. But it went further than that. Another commenter dug up the actual scanned screenplays. Chris Carter would format the dialogue blocks so they formed perfect visual rectangles on the page.
Which is insane for television dialogue. They were literally designing the dialogue visually for 9 years.
People in the comments were debating if this actually affected the weird, cryptic cadence of how characters spoke on the X-Files. If you are forcing a sentence to end exactly at the margin, you are going to pick slightly unnatural words, which totally fits the eerie vibe of that show.
It is such a cool piece of trivia, and it shows how technical constraints, whether it's an ASCII text file or a screenplay margin, can completely shape the creative output.
All right, moving from creative constraints to a major security oversight. The next article is titled Omarchy. Any user process can escalate to root.
For some background, Omarchy is a relatively new, highly opinionated Linux distribution. It's basically Arch Linux, but pre-configured to the exact preferences of David Heinemeier Hansson, or DHH, the creator of Ruby on Rails. The idea is to give developers a ready-to-go environment without the hassle of setting up Arch from scratch.
But a security researcher discovered a massive flaw in the default setup. Omarchy configured its default user as a member of the Linux Docker group. This is a known convenience tweak, so you can run Docker commands without typing sudo every time. But as the article points out, the Docker daemon runs as root. If you have access to the Docker socket, you can just ask it to launch a container as root, mount the entire host file system, and do whatever you want.
The author provided a proof of concept where a normal user process could just read the shadow file, which contains the system passwords, without any privilege prompt. And because Linux supplementary groups are inherited, this meant every single process running in the user session, web browsers, background tools, even AI coding agents, had a direct path to root access.
The Omarchy team patched it really quickly in version 4.01, which is great. But the Hacker News thread was a fascinating debate about security defaults. A lot of people were saying, hey, everyone knows adding your user to the Docker group is basically giving yourself root. What is the big deal?
But as other commenters pointed out, the big deal is that it was the default, opt-out configuration, and it was done silently. A user choosing to take that risk is one thing, but an operating system shipping that way out of the box is functionally equivalent to giving all user accounts root privileges without warning.
It also sparked a big debate about the Archway versus opinionated distros. One commenter argued that if you want Arch configured the way DHH does it, you don't actually want Arch Linux. The whole philosophy of Arch is reading the documentation and making those choices yourself.
Though, to be fair, installing Arch is notoriously difficult, which is why these opinionated spins exist. But the thread also had a lot of praise for Podman as an alternative to Docker. Podman is daemonless and runs containers as normal child processes in user namespaces, completely avoiding this root access problem. If you're tired of Docker security headaches, the HN crowd highly recommends giving Podman a look.
Let's stick with Linux for our next story, which comes from Tom's Hardware. California lawmakers have unanimously passed a Linux exemption from their upcoming age verification law.
This is about the Digital Age Assurance Act, AB 1856. The law is designed to force operating systems and device manufacturers to implement age verification for users. But lawmakers realized this would be a complete mess for open source software, so they explicitly exempted software distributed under licenses like GPL, MIT, BSD, and Apache.
The Hacker News comments on this were absolutely hilarious. The top comment simply said, "Excellent. From now on, all kids will become Linux natives. The decade of the Linux desktop is coming."
It is so true, though. If the only way a teenager can bypass a state-mandated age gate on their device is to install Ubuntu or Arch, we are going to see the most technically literate generation of teenagers in history.
Someone in the comments compared it to Minecraft. They credited Minecraft with getting an entire generation comfortable with the command line. A commenter mentioned how they got their current job because they knew the Java arguments for increasing heap size, which they only knew because they used to run modded Minecraft servers.
I loved the comment from the person who put their World of Warcraft guild leadership on their resume. Managing 100 volunteers, dealing with complex time-sensitive operations, handling the loot distribution systems. It is real management experience.
It really is, and it just goes to show that self-motivated learning, usually driven by wanting to play a game or bypass a restriction, is always more powerful than mandated learning. If California actually enforces this age verification on Windows and Mac, the open source community should probably start preparing for a massive influx of middle schoolers asking how to fix their broken bootloaders.
That would be amazing. All right, our final story today is a bit heavier. The title is European Commission Revives Push for Encryption Backdoors in Protect EU Strategy.
Yeah, this is a report on the EU's new internal security strategy called Protect EU. It's presented as a vision and work plan for the next few years. They are citing growing threats from hostile states, cybercrime, and terrorism. And to fight that, they are focusing on creating more effective tools for law enforcement.
Which is where the encryption debate comes in. The strategy uses euphemisms like creating roadmaps for lawful and effective access to data and seeking technological solutions for accessing encrypted data. For anyone in the tech and privacy space, that is code for mandating encryption backdoors.
The Hacker News community was very frustrated by this. The top comment pointed out how the European Commission operates. The Parliament cannot initiate legislation. They can only vote on what the Commission puts in front of them. If the Parliament votes no, the Commission just repackages the idea, waits a bit, and tries again. They only have to succeed once.
We saw this exact same playbook with the chat control legislation recently. The commenter noted that the EU will eventually require backdoors and encryption. It's just a question of how many tries it takes.
There was a really deep discussion in the comments about the structure of the EU itself. People were debating whether it functions more like a technocracy than a democracy. The Commission relies heavily on experts to define policy, but as one user pointed out, the bureaucrats can just find experts who already support the policies they want to enact. It gives the appearance of an evidence-based process, but it lacks direct public accountability.
And from a purely technical standpoint, the commenters reiterated what security professionals have been saying for decades. You cannot build a backdoor that only the good guys can use. The EU promises that cybersecurity will be protected, but once a mechanism exists to bypass end-to-end encryption, hostile states and criminal groups will inevitably find a way to exploit it. It fundamentally breaks the math that keeps digital infrastructure safe.
It's a tough situation, and it is definitely a story we will be keeping an eye on as the Protect EU strategy moves from a vision document into actual policy proposals.
Well, that is going to do it for today's episode of HN Pod. From the psychology of bug blindness to the visual poetry of the X-File scripts, it has been a great mix of stories.
As always, you can find the links to all the articles and the Hacker News discussions we talked about today in the show notes. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with a friend or leave us a review.
Thanks so much for listening. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Mike. We will see you tomorrow for more of the top stories from Hacker News.